Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today we're talking to not one, but two great guests. We've got the author of the brand new book, Star Wars Dark Legends, George Mann, and the book's illustrator, Grant Griffin. Dark Legends is a short story collection that contains six in-universe stories, a collection of canon-adjacent spooky tales and ghost stories. If you've seen this book or its predecessor, Myths and Fables, then you understand how integral the two mediums, words and art, are to these books. George's words and Grant's art make these books what they are, and it's a thrill to get them together, for the first time even, to talk about them. This is a spoiler discussion, so please, if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read the book. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a very, very great one today. Not one, but two giants in the world of publishing, really. You'll know them for sure when we introduce them, but they're here to talk about their joint effort, their newest book, which comes out on the 28th, which will either be a couple days from now or today, depending on when this episode comes out. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's from a little known IP called Star Wars. It's called Dark Legends, and it's the follow-up to last year. It's almost 2 years ago now, Myths and Fables. So with me today is the writer of these books, George Mann, and the illustrator, Grant Griffin. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, how's it going?
So this is kind of different. We're all in different continents.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you don't get to say that too often, I guess. We were just talking off air about everyone's current situations in the world, and we hope everyone continues to be safe, and we fight this thing through to the end, and eventually we'll come through it, I think, better for it. One of the things that is being hit by this pandemic, less important than all of us and friends and family being safe, is this weekend was going to be San Diego Comic-Con, which, George, I know you were going to be a part of the Lucasfilm publishing panel and some other panels, or at least some other events going on with your comic book. Grant, did you have any plans to go to San Diego? Or
no, I had no plans. I was pretty much just isolated here and, staying in the cave and painting. I was pretty much in quarantine before quarantine started. So,
well, I've been telling people, like, and this is, it's sad in a way, but it hasn't really cramped my style that much. I was sort of a homebody anyway, so it's sadly hasn't really destroyed my social life at all. But it is, you get to the conventions and going to the movies and all these things and concerts, and it's, those are, I think we were just talking about, those are favorite things of ours. So it's really hard to, when you start missing out on those things. And
I think you're right. I think that's the thing that why it feels you miss those, we're going to miss these conventions so much, is because we do have these sorts of careers where we work from home. We have a small bubble of friends. We don't go out a lot. And then you do get to go to these conventions. And actually that's a big social highlight of the year. Mm-hmm. So I think, like we were saying off air, I mean, I think it's absolutely the right call that these conventions shouldn't be going ahead in the current climate. But I am a bit sad. I'm missing the fact that I'm not going to see a lot of friends who I only see once a year at these events.
Have you and Grant ever met?
No, this is the first time we've talked.
First,
no. This isn't the first time you've talked.
It is.
Yeah. We kind of like.
So what? Why didn't you tell me that? Well, this has turned into something. Yeah. Now this is like matchmaker. Maybe it's matchmaker or something now. Yeah.
I feel like we're speed dating.
This is, George, meet Grant. Grant, meet George. Okay. I just meant like in the same room.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. How could you not? Yeah. Okay. This has taken on a whole new... I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I'm
going to sit back and let just say you guys talk. Okay. Well, then that's... You know what? Then let's go... Well, I'm sort of tickled by all this then. Let's get... that'll make an interesting little process conversation then, right? Because talk about the... So these two books, Myths and Fables... Actually, let's start off with this. This is going to be the most important question I ask you guys. Why is this goddamn book so small? I know you've heard, you've probably seen that, right? Have you seen people complaining about that at all? I don't know. I I arrange my books, my Star Wars books, aesthetically. So this is a nightmare for me. This is really.
I haven't actually seen a finished copy yet.
Okay.
I've seen people posting pictures online. I obviously knew it was going to be a smaller format.
Yeah.
I guess they were thinking of more of a, like a little bedside stories type book, like a little pocket book this time.
Right.
So thematically similar and.
The binding and everything is the same and it's all that. It's just a mini version, right? It's just a pocket version. But and I don't want anyone to think this is still not a worthwhile purchase. It's fantastic. But the thing that hurts me a little bit is I'm such a fan of your artwork in these books in particular, and it's just they're even smaller. So it's just hard for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I know it's not your decision to have the size of the book, but it's just, I remember like when people started coming online, you started seeing people with pictures holding them together and they're like, why is it so small?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to, happy to paint all the illustrations all day. So as soon as the briefs, I'm ready to go.
Okay. So let's, before we get into the actual book itself, let's talk a little process then, since you guys, haven't really talked before. And so obviously it's just through emailing or something, I assume, or what happens first, other than, you know, Lucasfilm giving you the green light and pitching you a few ideas, and then George, you're off and running. So I assume you write everything first, or at least
kind of. So what happened with, I think we've probably talked before about what happened with Myths and Fables, where, Isaac Lane approached me with the idea, and it was a very similar thing with Dark Legends. So, we had a great time doing the first book and it was received really well. And we just kept rolling because the process for Myths and Fables was very much, they came to me and said, we want a book that's a bit like Grimm's Fairy Tales for Star Wars. So I went in with loads of ideas, had a brilliant opportunity to go actually into the office and sit with some of the guys from Story Group and talk some of those ideas through. And we picked the ones we felt would give a good spread across Star Wars. And at this point, the stories are kind of like a half page to a page each, where I've done an outline of what the story would be. Essentially, and that we had some left over from that, which we all really liked, but we just couldn't fit into Myths and Fables, and they were a bit on the darker side anyway. And I think in one of those meetings, kind of Mike Siglaine basically said jokingly, you know, we'll save those for the Halloween book. And then we all kind of we got to the end of Myths and Fables and kind of went, Halloween book. And we kept just kept going. So we kind of cycled back to those stories, and none of them had been written. They were all in that kind of capsule form. And then I went away and kind of talked to Mike. He had a few ideas and generated a bunch more story ideas. We then went back to Lucasfilm with those. Again, they picked the ones that they felt gave a good spread, tied into the kind of elements of Star Wars that they wanted us to explore. And I believe at that point, that's when Lucasfilm would probably hand them to Grant at first to say, these are the stories we're going to do. Rather than the actual finished text of the stories. Am I right there, Grant?
Yeah, that is correct. So it's interesting for me because I kind of get to hear more on the inside, because I feel like I'm, as the freelance kind of the outsourcer, I'm still on the outside. So yeah, exactly. I get those early page and a half briefs and usually a few notes just at the end from Lucas Publishing ideas for the scenes. And I'm sure you're probably on there as well, George, man, as far as George, kind of the general feel of the image we're looking for. And then, from there, just reading through the one page outlines and then taking the notes. And then I just start on the composition layouts and generating ideas visually.
George, you mentioned there was a few left over from Myths and Fables. Do you remember which ones, and did they actually make it into Dark Legends? Cause you said you probably again had more than you needed.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure if they did. I think there were more starting points for ideas that then mutated into other things as we went on. So I'm not sure any of them were a straight port over, kind of like, you know, the general theme of a ghost story or that type of thing.
Did those have illustrations? Grant, did you have those done as well?
For which part?
For the ones that were sort of left over from Myths and Fables.
No, I don't know if I actually saw those.
Okay. Some of those, no, exactly. I think what happens is we kind of call them before they go to Grant. And then once we've picked the stories that we want to be in the book, then as Grant was saying, I put a suggestion for, you know, maybe the artwork could be a bit like this. I think Lucasfilm add their take on that as well, and it goes to Grant. Mm. But what's great about the process from my end is then what I get back is Grant's kind of early compositions. And, you know, where some artists will send sketches, what I get that, you know, Caitlin, the editor on the book, will send them to me and say, here's some of Grant's sketches. And they look like finished pieces of art to me anyway. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. But the art starts to come in as I'm then writing the stories because I'm working from a detailed outline and Grant's working from the same detailed outline. What I'm getting is by the time I'm sitting down to actually write about those characters, I'm starting to get artwork in. Mm. And it feeds back into the story at that point because it's so inspirational to see, you know, here's the story I'm writing right now, illustrated in front of me in these amazing scenes. So it kind of becomes a feedback loop. So that Grant will do little things in the artwork and then I'll put them into the story as I'm writing it.
That's awesome you said that, because it was like, it is kind of like, even though we haven't met before, it is kind of like this ping pong back and forth of like seeding ideas, because then sometimes I'll get a more outline, like an in-depth one. And then I didn't really tie it together, but I was like, oh, that kind of seems from one of my, like part of the illustration. Like, oh, like how did we sync that? And then obviously that makes sense. It's just kind of like a natural back and forth.
Yeah, it was exactly that. I see those pictures come in and they really fire me up to actually, I enjoy writing the stories more because they're there. I have two screens on my desk, and if I've got the artwork, when I'm writing the story, the picture that you've done, or even the compositional thing, is up on my screen while I'm writing. So
feed each other back and forth, because we're both kind of developing the story and the illustrations at the same time. So it's kind of like a nice marriage between the two as they naturally kind of start merging together and kind of creating that symmetry.
Was there any, like, was having you two on board together for Dark Legends, just, was that part of the deal? Was it like a deal, no deal type of thing? Or was there, I assume you were both in no matter what, but.
To be honest, from my point of view, it was never really talked about. It was just from my, it was just an assumption that, you know, when they said to me, we're going to do another book. And I just kind of said, and is it Grant? And it was a yes, of course it is.
We haven't asked him, but we know he's going to do it. Yeah.
That's kind of basically it.
Grant, for some of the images, and how many different, like, what's your process? Is there, do you come up with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 multiple different ideas, like completely different ideas? Or do you sort of just like really sort of focus on one and then sort of maybe just have one idea, but a few variations of that one idea?
Yeah, so usually with the notes and then kind of the brief, it's the idea's kind of already been pre-talked about. So for me, it's just like visually, how do I take that idea and make it the most interesting visually and story, like visual storytelling, and how to really further drive that narrative. So for me, it's honing in on one idea and doing 3 variations in which I'm playing with the camera angle and, you know, creating that mood and symmetry between everything. So it's, and then I usually send off about 2 to 4, depending on the one. Sometimes I'll really feel pretty strong and have a good, clear idea of how it's going to look. And in that case, I'll do about 2, but sometimes there's a lot of ideas that I have and I'm not really certain. So I'll do a few more, and they're all black and white, fairly loose sketches that I send off to get feedback from there.
I still think my favorite from the two books is Anya from the Black Spire and Fables. Talking to Grant here, that's probably my favorite image from the two books still. I'm so in love with that picture.
Thank you. Yeah, it's one of my favorites as well.
Oh, it's fantastic. There's so much story just in that picture, right? Like, it's like to your point, George, these things, if you can't get inspired by these as a writer, then I don't know what you got problems.
Sure, exactly that.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Dark Legends. Now, this has got some weird stuff going on in this book, guys. I mean, like, there's so much inspiration is, you know, obviously
Grimm, you know, talking about the brothers. And yeah, I got a very, this is a very like Tales from the Crypt vibe in a couple of times.
A couple
times.
I'm a horror.
Yeah, right. And I think a lot of that is because so much of the stories are more psychological based, right? There isn't like an obvious creature, let's say a monster or a crate dragon, let's say, or whatever. But it's, so much of it is emotional. I mean, even the predecessor, like there's no, like that's just, you know, the lieutenant driving himself crazy for no reason at all, right? Like it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, what I was really wanted to do with that story particularly was to look at the impact that Vader's actions have beyond the obvious. You know,
sure.
We throughout the movies, we see him force choking people to death and then casually walking off. Someone has to dispose of those bodies. People are going to get psychologically scarred and terrified by what happened. And I thought kind of maybe that's where that, you know, there's an interesting story, a type of Vader story that hasn't been told before.
The great part about that is you get to draw Darth Vader. Right?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Some of the early layouts, I was like trying to figure out how to just, because I loved it so much, I was really trying to like get the entire scene and figure out how to do. But in the end, we have more of a simple kind of, which I think again kind of works on the psychological, where it's just eyes of Vader and zooming in on there, which I think ultimately worked out better. But yeah, I love all the psychological aspects of it. And then like again, those stories that have never been told, like I never thought about that, but then once I got that very first story, I was like, yeah, I mean, the difference between the dark side of the force and the light is like you got some psychologically messed up people, and like you start people off, you're gonna mess with how people function on a day-to-day business.
Exactly. I mean, I think that was the thing for me. What, you know, obviously we wanted to tell creepy stories inspired by all the things you mentioned, Steve, but it was looking at the path to the dark side is paved in good intentions, you know, and the idea is it kind of was showing the path that some of those people go down to, you know, they keep doing what they think is right, perhaps, or they keep making a small judgment, or, you know, I'll just do this one thing and I'll be okay. I'll just do this bit and I'll have enough money, I can stop, you know, but they get greedier and greedier and greedier, and then suddenly they realize 3 steps later they're so far from the path of the light side to be lost. And that's kind of what I was thinking of, you know, that's what the dark side is. It was temptation. And they're moral tales at their heart, a lot of them. Kind of pointing you away from that sort of behavior, really, I suppose, is the intention behind that kind of fable.
The book starts with the orphanage. I assume that picture of the Grand Inquisitor there, Grant, very Christopher Lee inspired Dracula, it looks like to me, or
yeah, it's going for all the classics.
Yeah,
vampire.
George, what was that sort of what you were getting at with that tale? I mean, yeah,
it was Nosferatu for me. And that, sure. I think that was the moment that the book clicked, actually. And I'd been talking to Michael Siglaine, who's a huge horror fan as well, and looking at different story ideas, and it was that image that clicked. I'd been watching Rebels again with my son, and I saw the Grand Inquisitor, and I was thinking, you know, he's got these vampiric teeth and this gaunt aspect, and I thought, God, there's a horror story about him there. And it was just a scene in the show, and I kind of thought, oh my goodness, it's Nosferatu. It's that, you know, we've got to do the Grand Inquisitor. So I actually, at that moment, I had my phone with me. I just wrote Mike an email and just said, the Grand Inquisitor is Nosferatu, and he wrote back in capital, doing, "We are doing that. We are so doing that." And that's as I say, unlocked the book for me, because it set the tone for what we were going to do. And it was also the first piece of art that I saw from Grant. I don't know which way around you did the pieces, Grant, but that was the first one I saw, and just kind of went, "Wow, okay, he's absolutely nailed what was in my head," without me even having to describe it. It was, you know, like, we were just in tune on it, and I thought that set the tone for the whole book, really.
Is that, yeah, that piece? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just really quickly, because it just dawned on me, does that how it works? Sort of just a really quick process question again, Grant. Yeah. Do you just receive all the outlines at the same time, or sort of in piecemeal type of thing?
For the most part, I usually get a good chunk of them. Okay. Every once in a while, some other stories that are getting fleshed out, but usually have like three or four to get started with.
And the fact that George saw that one first, was that just, you just happened to finish that one first, or you got?
I think so. It may have just been the one I was also really excited about, because like that Nosferatu piece is like very much inspired by, I'm going to draw a blank on the actor's name, but it's like this classic part of him, like coming off the ship, and he's got these crazy claw hands.
Yeah.
And they're all hooked. And so like that very much kind of set the pace for that picture.
Sure. Is that sort of the note you got on that one? Like, was Nosferatu, George? Was that actually written on the page on your notes, or?
Off the top of my head, I think it probably was. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that was framed in some sort of window, because again, there's that classic clip you always see of Nosferatu. He's come through the window, and the curtains are billowing, and he's kind of, his hands are claw-like, and he's looking, you know, furtively. And it's that scene that was in my head, but I thought, you know, but if it's the Grand Inquisitor instead.
That one was a chat. Like, once I got the cast shadow in there, like, that was, like, the main part that really kind of tied it all together and really set the mood of it to make it a little more ominous.
George, for you, just from a narrative standpoint, that's a fun one. You get to talk about, you know, sort of purge survivors, you know, the Force-sensitive children, and you introduce sort of, like, a new Jedi there too, right? So how much leeway did you have there from Lucasfilm with
They were amazing. And, you know, obviously, we'd done a lot of these because we'd done the Myths and Fables. We'd also done the six extra stories for the special edition of Myths and Fables, which mm-hmm. is coming at some point soon. And so I think, you know, we got into a working relationship where they were trusting me to just get on with it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'd get notes and make adjustments and things. But I was amazed by the amount of leeway they gave me to create. And I think, for me, that's always the greatest part of it. I mean, I adore writing about those characters like Vader, who have been such a fundamental part of my upbringing, and my kind of pop culture. But the thing I enjoy most about writing these books is creating new things and adding new elements, because I feel like I'm giving something back to the bigger story of Star Wars. So to be able to add in these little characters here and there, and then to see people run with that, you know, Grant will illustrate it, and then someone will pop it onto Wikipedia, and you know, it's just that kind of that little glow you get from going, oh yeah, I created that character, and you know, people are talking about them now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the thing, right? Anytime we are filling, you know, as we go on, publishing is filling in more and more blanks on the timeline, right? But one of the things, this is a big part of the era that hasn't been explored that much, especially with Purge Survivors. So
Now
they got to figure out what happens to this Jedi because of you.
Right? I'd be happy. I put my hand up to tell that story.
Of course. I'm sure you would. Now, you can't have any Star Wars publishing these days without talking about Black Spire or Batuu. So Buyer Beware, which is a really cool story. What was the inspiration behind that one, George?
So that one, I was actually looking back at those kind of 70s anthology British horror movies. There's this one where Peter Cushing plays a shopkeeper, an antiquarian shopkeeper, and basically the items that he's selling are cursed. It's kind of a Monkey's Paw type thing. And,
sure.
And that's where we got to here. We were talking about the Monkey's Paw type story. And exactly what I was referring to earlier, I think this one typifies it most, that character who's, I mean, he's already a bit of a baddie, as it, for want of a better word, but mm-hmm. he sets himself on a path, and at every point, if he'd stopped, he would have been okay. But it gets greedier and greedier and greedier, and keeps pushing and keeps pushing until suddenly he's murdered someone, and then, you know, he's going down this path. And even then, he probably could have got away with it if he hadn't put the mask on again. Mm-hmm. And it's that's kind of the trick I was trying to do there. It's that cursed item in an antiquarian store, essentially.
It's wonderful how you wrap, you know, comes back into Doc Gondar's hands, and the cycle essentially starts over again. Are we allowed to say, is that Lord Adris's mask? Are we allowed to say that?
Is that what it says in the book?
It doesn't say it in the book.
I
Never mind. Moving on.
We're gonna move on.
Pass.
Sorry.
Let's just say, if anyone's been to Galaxy's Edge, there's a mask in Doc Gondor's shop, which looks strikingly similar. Grant, for, you know, God, there's so many images of Doc Gondor now, right? Because of a lot of the publishing, right. And because he's a real living creature. If you drive down to Florida or fly to Florida and go to, or California and go to Galaxy's Edge, Ithorian there. How did you manage that one? Did you look up images of him from that's everywhere now?
Few photos that get submitted to me, and you know, from there it's like Google all the way. So I'll spend hours kind of gathering reference before I start on some of these things.
Sure. There's no shortage of pictures of Doc Gondor these days because of that, right? So we talked about the predecessor already a little bit, which was great. It was funny, just it's such a great story. Seeing him, just I can imagine him fumbling down the halls, crying, sweating, and just people from the point of view of us looking at this insane person, right? Like even up till the end, and then bumping into Vader. Just it's in someone else's hands, it could be a comedy in a way, right? I mean, it's not funny. He has a mental illness. It's not funny, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's such an absurd situation. Blood Moon, pretty obvious, sort of what trope you're going with there. And also, one of the great pieces of art, Grant, for sure. You must have had a lot of fun with that one. What was the inspiration though, specifically, George, for the story? Like, you know, having them go to the planet that was essentially like, it's essentially poisoned by this red sun now, this broken star, right?
Yeah, it's kind of I wanted to do a werewolf story, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. I think I looked at kind of different ways of doing that. Obviously, we've got the Shistvanian, but also, you know, there are other kind of races where it could have worked. And I wasn't sure whether to go with the full transformation or not. But actually, this one, I was talking it through with my son. He's 16-year-old son. And I was talking about how how to make it feel like a dark side story, and thinking about kyber crystals that bleed. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking about maybe there was a crystal cliff face that was bleeding, and he kind of went, what if there was a whole moon? And I thought, oh, wow, I'm taking that, boy. So we ended up...
he received no credit, though, right, officially?
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about having a 16-year-old son who loves Star Wars. He reads all the drafts of the stories before anyone else and gives me feedback.
Right.
So that was an image that he kind of put in my head, and I thought, right, well, we have a whole moon and solar flares that are kind of these strange red kyber output that's kind of like, Kylo's lightsaber. Mm. And what would that do to someone's head? Mm-hmm. You know, someone who was sensitive to it, and that's where we went with the story. And I kind of, first of all, I thought, well, we avoid the obvious and make it look like the Lasat, and then we leaned into the obvious and went, actually, no, it's the Shistvanian. But sure. Actually, then there's the twist at the end as well,
which is funny because, and he's, you know, he's warning them the whole time too, right? Like he gave them an out. He told them what was gonna, he basically told them what was gonna happen. But Grant, this is one of the first images we saw from this book other than the cover. I think StarWars.com released this one, was the first one they released. What was it like? What was the idea? I assume just werewolf was your only note? Just a Vadian werewolf?
Yeah, pretty much. What I enjoy about fantasy and science fiction is kind of the tropes. Like the werewolf silhouetted by the moon has been so done and overdone. But what's fun for me is like a fantasy illustrator is like, okay, what is my werewolf and moon look like, and trying to find something like a little new angle or something that is mine in that little genre of cliche.
And you're like, I know a werewolf with a hip blaster with a hey, that'll do it. Just he's not scary enough. Now you give him a deadly weapon.
I know, the claws blaster. So what I love about Star Wars is like those crazy fingers on some of these characters, especially in the earlier ones. It's like, there's no way they're gonna put their
I know,
that's like Greedo's hands. Like,
I was just it's, you stole it out of my mouth. I was just gonna say, like, any Rodian could not hold a blaster. There's no way. This story is also it's kind of the most it's gory, right? Isn't it? I mean, it's kind of gory a little bit. what's your sort of line with that, George, with all these stories? Like, how dark is it? Can you get too dark? How dark do you want to get?
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, they're written for all ages, but obviously need to be suitable for kind of 8 to 10 middle reader sort of. And so I've got a big belief that you shouldn't write down for children. Mm-hmm. So I didn't set out to write stories for children. I set out to write stories that children could read, if you see what I mean.
Sure.
So I kind of thought, well, I'm not going to then kind of talk down to them in that way either. They're meant to be scary stories, you know. They need to be scary, but they've got a moral to them. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you go back to the original Grimm's fairy tales, they're quite harrowing, a lot of them, quite dark. And funny enough, so I did that, and I sent them in, and the main note that I had back was, these are great, make them darker. So I kind of thought, well, okay, I'm on the right path. So then I kind of did another pass. And the werewolf one, I mean, like you say, Predecessor is a psychological story. The werewolf story is more out and out kind of monster horror, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I kind of thought, well, we got to lean into that then. We've got to make it a monster story with, you know, and what happens in monster stories? Well, people get chewed up by the monster. Mm-hmm. So it needs to happen. It was fun trying to find that line, actually. And not do it in a way that's going to really terrify children, but do it in a way that is going to give them a kind of scary thrill.
It is. It's probably one of the few that where I was like, my pulse got up a little bit when I was reading it, especially sort of like during the pursuit phase, right? Like the act three, you know what I mean? Like that's, even I was like, okay, let's go, run, you know what I mean? You kind of get into it a little bit because this thing is, it's going to tear you apart. Dark Mirror, this is a great short. And Grant, this is a great illustration. So I love this whole sort of like cognitive dissonance thing, right? Where you can't imagine you're capable of doing these things so much that your mind just drives that wedge in between the two personalities. It's almost Jekyll and Hyde in a way.
That's exactly where it came from. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So I love this whole story. And again, you get to introduce new characters, new Jedi. Talk about that and sort of where, I guess I was going to say, I don't need to ask where the inspiration came from, Jekyll and Hyde, but sort of what was the idea behind sort of having this like totem around his neck, this amulet that ended up being sort of the cause of all this?
Well, yeah, so it's an interesting one because I wanted to do a Jekyll and Hyde type story. And, hadn't really seen a Jekyll and Hyde type story in Star Wars before. Mm-hmm. And I felt strongly that it had to be a Jedi because they're paragons of the light. So, you know, you've got to be careful, really, because Jedi don't fall very often, nor should they in the background, because otherwise, you know, we'd have, you know, more Sith and less Jedi, as it were. I wanted to I had to find a way that a Jedi could become this kind of hide-like creature without changing the fact that they were still a Jedi and still thought they were a Jedi. So it wasn't... I didn't want to do the classic kind of story of Jekyll and Hyde where they're experimenting on themselves. And, and I thought, well, what is it about a Jedi? It would be about repression. Because if a Jedi is feeling things that they shouldn't, they're going to bury those feelings.
Right.
So that's where the monster comes from. It's that everything dark that the Jedi's ever thought being repressed, suddenly boiling up to the surface and being let loose. That's a interesting way to tell a story about, you know, the dark side, because it's kind of a literal dark side to that character. So that's kind of where I got the idea of the necklace, and kind of thought, well, if there's a pendant that's absorbing those thoughts, it's kind of a metaphor for that burying of the darkness.
Did Nil know that about the necklace, do you think? And do you think he would have passed that on to Saul had he had the chance?
Probably, I think. He was certainly on the path to that realization. It was, again, it's that thing of it's bubbling away beneath the surface. And if you don't think about it, it's not real. If you know what I mean?
Right. But
when forced to face it, you know, I think he probably would have passed it on. Again, it's that thing I mentioned earlier about the path to the dark side being paved in good intentions. It's, you know, he's been this amazing Jedi. That necklace was taking all of that darkness and hiding it. And he, you know, on the surface, he's been this amazing hero. I think, you know, that's again one of those kind of the way the dark side plays with your mind. Maybe you'd start to think maybe it was worth it.
I love, Grant, this. You get to draw your first, well, it was not your first, but you get to draw a lightsaber, which is always fun, I'm sure. And just this image of having like his shadow cast behind him on the wall, it reminded me a little bit of the, you remember the Phantom Menace poster with a little, you know, Anakin's walking and the Vader sort of shadow is sort of looming over him.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of like your his that side of you is never too far behind, I guess, is the idea. Talk about sort of how was this outlined to you, this story? Because that would be this one seems, even though like Jekyll and Hyde, we all know that story, but it's pretty abstract.
Right. Yeah. So again, on the notes, it's kind of like going for Jekyll and Hyde, but then kind of taking and running with it. And yeah, this is one of my favorite stories. And what I love about it is, again, that psychological aspect. And for me as like an artist, I don't know, George, you probably relate to this too, is like that. It's so much of that inner conflict that is always inside. So for me, it's just like that inner dialogue that's kind of always eating at you a little bit. I'm like, oh, is this going to work? So it's very much very relatable to me as like that inner turmoil. So being able to exercise that out of myself and onto a canvas, which is what art has kind of always been for me, is just like an outlet. It was, you know, very refreshing, and being able to try and capture that psychological aspect is always challenging and fun.
Is that more fun for you? Like how, comparing, let's just stand back a little bit, comparing these stories to the myths and fables ones, like sort of like the more Arthurian, you know, like especially the, you know, the oh, it doesn't say it's Obi-Wan, but the Obi-Wan crate dragon, the heroic more illustrations. But do you prefer sort of these little darker, you like tapping into your dark side a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I definitely lean. I always found the antagonist to be more interesting. Sure. Personally, I feel like I just love the character flaws. And as an illustrator, those are really fun to exaggerate or be subtle with and play around with. Mm-hmm. So, and Myths and Fables, the boogeyman story, and having the creative freedom to like do Darth Vader in a way that he's never been seen, like someone else's idea of what like passed down, and then as a horror scene, something terrible. So that was kind of the inspiration to carry over into Dark Legends, was kind of feeding off of that image.
So the Gilded Cage, it's my favorite story from this book. It's my favorite illustration. I love. And if anyone hasn't read Myths and Fables, then I guess maybe it's not a requirement, but it's important. So this story connects directly to a story from Myths and Fables.
Yeah.
What was the idea behind this one? Let's start with the artwork, actually, because I think it's incredible. Grant, so you get to draw Night Sisters, which is awesome, and they look great. You got to have a little fun with this one, because there's no way someone could describe this image to you, right?
I'm trying to look back on what the brief exactly was for it.
Yeah.
I mean, these were a while back when I was working in the idea.
I'm asking you to stretch your memory.
I remember again, it was like, this is one of those images where I think I had to submit four, and they were all completely different because how are we going to weave these elements together? So it was very much one of those where I think I just like shotgun effects and just sent out four different ideas in completely different directions to try and capture what was happening in that story.
Right. George, so obviously, like I said, if there's a direct connection to a story from Myths and Fables, the Gaze of Stone short story, right? What was the idea behind that? Was the idea to have one of these stories connect to a story in Myths and Fables, or did this sort of start somewhere else and then end up sort of back to where it began?
It was, yeah, I mean, there was no actual discussion about having a story crossover between the two books. It was more, Gaze of Stone was my favorite story in the previous book. And I've just really enjoyed writing about Darth Keldoth and creating Darth Keldoth for all the reasons I talked about earlier about adding something to the canon. And it was, the story that's more than any of the other stories was the story that people kept talking to me about on Twitter. You know, the fans who'd read the book come back and go, "We love Darth Karloff, we love Gaze of Stone." And I just thought, I'm doing a book about the Sith. I mean, the joking working title for Dark Legends was Siths and Legends. Mm. And I kind of thought, right, well, I've got a Sith there that we put in the first book. Wouldn't it be great if we can expand his story and add more onto him? And, you know, we knew we wanted to do something with Night Sisters as well, because you can't do a Dark Side book without Night Sisters.
Right.
And I kind of thought, right, well, then, you know, rather than have Night Sisters versus Jedi, or Darth Karloff versus Jedi, or doing, you know, Dark versus Light, why don't we do Dark versus Dark? And, you know, really, really kind of dig into the Dark Side. And you see that antagonism between the Night Sisters and Dooku, obviously, in the show. So mm-hmm. I kind of thought, well, it's not unprecedented that there'd be this. So that's where it came from, really. It's a desire to want to do more with Darth Karloff, as well as the Night Sisters, and then kind of building a story up from there. I think, like, my first draft of this story was probably twice as long, and I had to trim it back to make it fit, because I kept going, and then this happened, and Darth Karloff did all this stuff.
It is the longest one in this one still.
It is. And I think it's considerably shorter than my first draft, which is fine, and as it should be. But I kind of just got into the swing of it, you know, and again, it was just that freedom to just, like, what I love about myths and fables is you can throw references out there that, you know, might get picked up on in the future or might not. Just like on the first page, Moldorian crime lords to the Seven Kings of Ilmoth. You know, we never explain who those people are or what they are, but it's that level of creativity that Lucasfilm have let us do with these stories, which I think just makes them feel more embedded in the universe, actually.
Mm. The idea of this Gilded Cage idea, obviously, it's you've twisted it a little bit. I mean, it's sort of like historically, a Gilded Cage is you go from luxury to you're in a false sense of, you know, it's sort of like the princess living up in the castle, but it's really her prison. This is really one of those ones where you really go psychological, right? I mean, trapped. The Gilded Cage happens to be inside the mind of a Sith Lord who, you know, is always 14 steps ahead of everybody else. And you get to create, again, because Kelleth, you get to create, you know, a new Night Sister as well, Zeldin, who's fantastic. Where did the Gilded Cage idea come from, though? Like this whole, you know, it's a mind warfare, really, this whole story. There's no, you know, there's very, yeah, there's a little bit of direct conflict, right? When they, you know, they set him up with the Jedi and stuff, but it's mostly just all takes place in their mind. It's all inner, a lot of it's just inner dialogue too, right?
I can't remember the original spark of the idea, because unlike some of the others where we've gone with a classic trope and twisted it.
Right.
Sorry, Jekyll and Hyde, what have you. This was more where I just kind of thought, I knew I wanted to do another psychological story other than predecessor. And I kind of thought, what's the worst thing? It was that kind of thing of the worst type of prison maybe would be being trapped and seeing everything and not being able to do anything about it. You know, being trapped in someone's mind would do that. And that's where I kind of thought, I got into that kind of mind games thing and just thought, this, you know, it's the worst possible thing. And also, a long-lived Sith can play the long game as well. And I think, you know, patience being a virtue in this instance for him, and saying, you know, he knows from, obviously he knows from the very start what the Night Sisters are doing, and he just lets it unfold and waits for his moment. And it just felt very true to the Sith for me to do something like that, to lure someone in, give them that false sense of security, let them even change what he's doing to make them think that he's under their thrall, and then at the last minute turning it on them. It just came from like lots of brainstorming, thinking about how to do a psychological story that was a bit different, and how to really kind of get into the mind of a Sith, both literally and metaphorically.
Does all this come through, Grant, like in the notes and outlines you're given? Like, are you, you know, are you, you're that sort of, you know, maybe just it helped doing one book already for sure, getting in the mind of sick, twisted mind of George Mann. But
a familiar playground.
Yeah. Is this everything George is sort of talking about now and all that? Does that really come through for you? Have you guys been sort of really, really in sync on stuff like that?
Yeah, like I said, we haven't met, but it seems like the cool thing about art, whether written or illustrated, is like once you've seen someone's art and you see it on a regular basis, you kind of develop a relationship and you get to know that person through how they create. So again, it becomes this natural sort of ping pong back and forth, which is very enjoyable to be a part of. And yeah, just trying to, in this story, in the brief, it was like, it was there in the page. And then from there, I was just trying to capture those metaphors and things. And I was very much inspired by Wizard of Oz. It was kind of like the inspiring, all right, how am I going to sell this on that idea?
Right on. Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. You can see that for sure. Who decides on the order of these stories, George? Is it just Lucasfilm?
Lucasfilm, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So they end with a little Rise of Skywalker tie-in. A Life Immortal. One of the things the Rise of Skywalker did was introduce a lot of great ideas. Now, we can argue about whether they delivered on them or not, but they introduced a lot of great ideas. And one of them for sure was Exegol. I think we all agree there, right? The idea of the Sith Temple being there for eons, who knows? And the kind of weird sort of alchemy stuff that was going on there. And that's really, I assume that's kind of where this story came from. But talk about A Life Immortal, George, because this is a really cool thing. And it's one of those things that, in hindsight, right? But it's like, man, I would have liked a little bit of this in the movie.
I was really lucky with it. This was actually one of the last stories I wrote. I'd written the bulk of the book at this point. But I knew all along Lucasfilm wanted me to do a story that was key into Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. There was only a certain point in the process where I could have some information. So we dragged that out as long as we could, and then ended up having a really interesting conversation with the guys there about, you know, and I tried to do it. They were great, actually, because I said to them, no, I don't want too many spoilers for the movie. You can spoil this bit of it, because we knew we wanted an Exegol story. So I said, you know, spoil what you have to, but only go as far as you have to, because I don't want to know what happens to Rey and Kylo and all of that. You know, I want to enjoy that in the movie if I don't need to. So they were brilliant, and they kind of delved into what the Emperor had been doing, what Exegol was, you know, and they'd kind of said, look, we'd like to tell a story about a... So this had more of a steer than perhaps some of the others. Mm-hmm. We'd like to tell a story about what happened, you know, what was going on in Exegol beforehand, in like a cautionary tale from the past. So yeah, so then I took that information about that idea of eternal life and wanting eternal life, and the kind of the moral, I think, again, one of the things I've tried to do with all of these stories is go, what's the moral of the story? What's the kind of the message in the story? And this one is about kind of be careful, you might get what you wish for.
Right.
You know, you might get immortal life, but it's not going to be as you imagined it. There's always a twist. I kind of, with the, you know, you look at the illustration by Grant, you've got the Darth Noctis, but also this kind of creature that she finds almost Smeagol-like. Mm-hmm. In the ruins, and I was thinking of Gollum, and I was thinking of Igor in, you know, classic Frankenstein type stories, and that idea that kind of it's all there before her. She can see, you know, what's gonna happen to her if she follows this path, but she's not really looking. But most of all, the thing that surprised me the most out of all of this is the fact they let me get away with a sickle-bladed lightsaber.
I was just going to ask you, yeah, and Grant, I was going to ask Grant about that too, because that's canon now, right? Like, that exists. So, Grant, one of the things cool, I don't know, again, in the timeline, this it's hard to tell, but, you know, this image, this throne that we now know was a Macquarie illustration from way back, they used in this film. So did you obviously, that's the inspiration for the throne in this image. How long ago did you see that image? Were they like, this is what we want you to draw? What was the idea there?
Yeah, so this one was a challenging one because, again, this was the last story that George wrote. And then this was also, I think, in time when the really trying to push the production schedule of the book. So, like, really trying to scrambling to get this illustration finished. And, like, it was in time with the movie and you're working with limited references and things. So it was, like, those early concept designs. And then again, there's, you can kind of see that lightning struck image from the trailer. And that was pretty much we had to work with. And I think I needed to start illustrating it before I even got the full story as like who the characters were. Mm-hmm. Ended up kind of working because then we could just, that's why the figure is just completely just hooded. Cause I had no idea who that character was going to be, what, you know, species, what.
Oh, really? Okay, that's cool.
Anything, yeah. So
that's like that famous Drew Struzan story about the Thing poster, right? When he had to draw the Thing poster and they gave him nothing. They didn't even tell him what the movie was about. And so the iconic Thing poster, he drew that based on zero information. So, and then Grant, the idea, so when you did sort of do the character, somebody at some point told you Sickle Lightsaber. Was you just sort of had it in your head right away? You knew what you wanted, or was that you're like, what are you, Sickle? Lightsabers can't be a sickle.
That was very much me. Before I just had like the light, like the hand outreach, because it's kind of, I just love that power of just the hand, not even having to use your saber.
Right.
But then we added the saber, and then I put like a regular saber in there. And I think it even said sickle in the brief, but I was just like, sabers aren't sickles. I was thinking like the handle. I was like,
okay. Oh, right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
She's holding it. So you can't see the handle. So I just painted a straight saber and they're like, no, like a sick. And then I was like, oh, like a literal, you really want me to curve it up. And then I was like, okay, well, do I curve up or down? So I did like two, but the curve down sickle is like, and you know, it's not phallic and not just looking. So yeah, I was worried on what kind of the responses were going to be, and it's always entertaining in the Twitter threads.
Yeah, people were shocked, I think, for sure. Right?
Either people love it or they're like, no, this is not right.
That's the beauty of these stories though, because you know, this plausible deniability, because it's sure a myth.
Right,
so you know,
right, it's like Canada adjacent, I guess we'll call it, or yeah.
What's canon is the story, if you see what I mean. It's like an in-world story, but it doesn't necessarily mean the facts are as they are in the page. So they've got this kind of layer of deniability to it. If they want to say, actually, no, Sickle Baby Lightsabers only exist in the mythology of the Star Wars universe. But I don't know. I just wanted to do something different and cool for this character.
It's very cool. And obviously Grant, I assume they just said, you know, this Sith needs to have a, cause yeah, you look at this and you think for sure Smeagol, Gollum. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, there's a Sith Gollum now. And is that sort of just what right away you're like, yeah, I can do a Gollum.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of those, like, I think that again, I wasn't sure we were what the creatures were. Mm-hmm. And I definitely had like some just weird, creepy, but he was bulky. And then I think one of the notes was like slimmer. And then again, with production timeline, before you know it, there's like Gollum on X-Skull. Mm-hmm. Of what's been happening.
Right.
Because it's like, so once you start doing those thin monsters and then the kind of in the shadow, and then that image from Lord of the Rings is just so iconic. So it's just kind of how it came to be.
Right. It's like you just copyrighted now. Damn it, Gollum. Did you know sort of that Gollum creature though? What was the reason behind it? Like, did you, was that in the line? Okay. So you knew the story.
That
okay,
was there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
George, in your mind, how many times has this cycle repeated itself? Like how long has this been going on where, you know, somebody's shown up and their hubris has turned them into a Gollum essentially?
Oh. A few.
We
never talked about how many, but we did talk about, you know, this isn't the first and obviously not the last.
Right.
It's a trap that they keep falling into because no one's quite got it right yet. And then the Emperor gets close, gets really close, but doesn't quite pull it off, obviously. So the idea was, you know, this like Sith history would stretch back like ancient Egyptian history, I suppose.
Right.
You know, longer. And there'll be many attempts to try to do things like this. And this is you know, this planet Exegol is there as a kind of nexus of that energy and a secret place that they'll find and try and use to do this ritual, essentially.
Star Wars Dark Legends comes out on the 28th. Guys, this is fantastic. I really loved, I mean, you know, I spoke to George last time for Myths and Fables, and I really, really enjoyed that book, and I really enjoyed this book. It's a shame I can't put it on the shelf next to the other one because it's so small. But a huge part of this is Grant. I just love these images so much, man. I really just dig it. They just have so much story just unto themselves, and I'm sure George is just so happy that you're a part of this process.
Now I do
every February I vacation in Rotan, so I think what I'm going to do is bring George with me. And then we're going to skip over to Nicaragua and hang out with Grant, if that's all right, Grant.
I'm game.
We're just going to
come. I'm game.
Beautiful. Come on down, guys. Yeah. Get some surf lessons.
Absolutely. Yeah, I lived in Santa Cruz for a bit. I can stand up on a board anyways.
There you go.
But listen, guys, yeah, I can't thank you enough from different parts of the world. Please continue to be safe. I don't know when this thing's going to be over, when everyone's going to be in the same room again, but... I think last time I talked to George officially, I think we talked about another book, and he's a great liar. so I won't ask the same question again. You can't fool me.
You know, we're not allowed to talk about
it. I know that. But I mean, if there's a Dark Legends, there's got to be a Light Legends. So we'll just leave it at that. And cross. So if everyone buys this book, then that'll pretty much guarantee that it'll happen. I'm sure he's got a whole load of stories ready to be told, and I'm sure Grant's just dying to draw some more lightsabers, some sickle lightsabers.
You know it.
Yeah. So anyways, guys, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Continue to be safe. George, I'll see you, but the Lucasfilm Publishing panel this weekend. For the virtual San Diego Comic-Con at home. It's going to be interesting to see how this goes. I do like the reach these events give people now internationally, right? A lot of people can't attend these events, right? So that's one of the things I do.
Great to watch.
It's free. Yeah, that's another great part. And there's just a load of great panels. There's a really great, speaking of Drew Struzan earlier, there's a really great, Grant, there's a really great movie poster panel this weekend.
Nice.
First Diego Comic-Con. Yeah, look that up. That looks like a lot of fun. And George, you mentioned a comic book. What's going on with that? Are you doing anything this weekend for that as well or no?
Not specifically this weekend, but I've been doing a lot of kind of interviews and press for it's called Engine Ward, illustrated by Joe Eisner. He's a co-creator on it, and it's out from Vault Comics, came out last week.
So everyone look for that. Get it wherever you buy your stuff. Grant, what's going on with you?
It's a lot of things that I just can't talk about. Really. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's like a year from now when things
are such.
But I'm lucky to be in a position to where people still need work and things are in production line. So I consider myself extremely lucky.
I keep thinking of new stuff to talk about. You did some High Republic stuff.
Yes.
So we can look forward to that early next year. Right. So look for Grant's work on that project, which all looks fantastic. And George, do you have a website? I don't even know if you have a website. Do you?
You know, my website got hacked, so I had to take it down. I'm going to build a new one. So if people want to find me in the meantime, Twitter's the best.
Twitter, yeah. And Grant, you're on Twitter too. I know that.
Yes.
The hellscape that it is sometimes. But anyways. All right. I've kept you guys long enough. Thanks so much, guys. And we'll talk to you all real soon.
There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Massive thanks to both George and Grant for taking the time to speak with me from different continents, no less. It's amazing to me that they've never met before, but have been able to produce two great books now with the third on the way. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Bye for now. Our time has come, it's time to go now.